Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Whittaker.
Welcome to Parents in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because, let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Parent in Hell with...
Finny, can you say Rob Beckett?
Rob Beckett.
Can you say Josh Widdicombe?
Josh Widdicombe.
Well done.
Rob Beckett.
Oh, I like that kid. I like that kid's energy. He's nice
Vinny,
and he's cute.
Good name, Vinny.
Vinny.
Ooh, he took a casual bite of a cheesy biscuit midway through. There we go.
Vinny's a good name, but if he's from Southeast London, people will think he'll be hard. Did I say where they're from?
Cheltenham.
Oh, you can be Vinny in Cheltenham.
Yeah.
Vincent, come this way.
I only discovered your podcast when I had Vinny, and it was a godsend during the bleak winter of 2020 when he was small. Thanks for being so sexy and relatable. Love, Carrie, and Vinny from Cheltenham.
Lovely stuff.
Do you want to hear about drawing, Rob?
What's that, mate?
Do you want to hear about my drawing?
Yeah, I think it's
the
big
tease.
We trailed it,
didn't we? We trailed it.
We trailed this. You're learning a new skill. What is that skill?
Drawing. Well, I decided, because we've discussed this before, get into something you're not good at, because a bit like that you can just relax into, you're not trying to make anything of it, you're just having fun. So for my birthday, I asked for, and Rose bought me, I'm doing a drawing masterclass online every morning this week from 8 till 9. Yeah.
So 5 days in a row?
Yeah. To learn skills of drawing.
So what have you drawn so far?
Well, you have three objects. Do you want to see my drawing? Well, obviously it's day one.
So is this a Zoom with a real person?
Yeah, it's a Guardian masterclass, a Guardian drawing masterclass. I logged in. Most stiff neck in the world, yeah?
It's the most on-brand Josh Whittaker, couple of little fellas drawing.
But imagine, Rob, imagine you've put Jim Jefferies into your podcast search, into Spotify, and you've gone, oh, listen to that, because I love Jim Jefferies, and then you get two fucking blokes talking about the Guardian Drawing Masterclass. Skip to the interview, it'll be about 8 or 9 minutes in.
So what?
Should
what
we be more laddie in this intro and attempt to get more
So what are you drawing,
listeners?
Tits? Yeah. Tits and fannies.
Tits and fannies.
Just
he's
really
and
good
drugs.
At drawing porn. Really good at drawing anime porn by the end of the week. So I logged in, Rob.
Yeah, you can see all the other people. Yeah. I am the youngest by 30 years.
Really?
I wanted to draw. I love drawing with my daughter, so I thought I'm going to try and get better at drawing.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying myself so far.
That's nice.
Yeah. Brought my three objects.
So what are you drawing?
So you're going to draw a object with a lot of sharp... object with round things. So I've got a mug here, yeah?
Right, okay.
An object that's kind of malleable and soft. I've got a Plymouth Argyle scarf. And an object with hard edges. I've got a mini eggs box. A mini eggs Easter egg box.
So you're drawing a mug, a scarf and a box?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to see some of my drawings?
Yeah, I do actually.
Yeah, do you? Where are I can't remember where I put them.
They're framed on the wall, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not brilliant yet, Rob.
Let's have a look at this.
So this one was done with my left hand. So we do loads of exercises.
What are you doing in your right hand? Wanking.
Oh, here
just
we
trying
go.
To make
enjoy
it,
Jim Jefferies fans. Enjoy it. This is your two-minute drawing with your non-dominant hand.
Right, okay. I can't really see it. Your camera's not good. It's all grainy for me. I don't know if that's what we're getting at. You might have to take photos of it, Josh. I can't.
I'll take photos and send it to you. They're not very good. What I'll do, Rob, is next week...
Day one.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll send you the start of the week and the end of the week.
That's exactly... No, I think that's a good... It's good to have other hobbies
different
things.
I feel excited by the
fact
that I've got a hobby.
It's liberating.
Totally,
because,
Rob.
And this is maybe a bit too zen and a bit wishy-washy, but if you label yourself as something too much, then the ego gets in the way and then you can't do anything new or exciting because you're like, I'm a comedian, I can't draw, I like Plymouth, I don't like this, I don't like that. And then you box yourself in. But if you are just open to new things, then, you know, you're drawing all week and you get out your own edge. You're not just thinking about work all the time or the kids. So
exactly.
Do you know what? I can't think of anything worse to do 5 days in a row at 8 a.m. However, everyone's different and I'm glad you're happy.
Rob, get it feels this, like right? So we're recording this before the tour this week.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to get up in the hotel the day of the O2 to do my final drawing lesson. In a hotel in Cardiff.
Really? Yeah.
Well, so we get to Cardiff at 2 a.m. on Wednesday night. I've got a drawing lesson 6 hours later.
You'll be tired for the gig. You'll be knackered.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I was up drawing a scarf. One of the things about those three objects is I was like, well, I've got to choose my objects wisely because I've got to pack them with me to go on tour.
Yeah, but is it fun to draw a box?
Well, not so far. One of my drawings, I ran out of time because I was too busy working on the Mini Eggs logo. I'll be honest with you.
That's
a lesson learned early doors. I just want to be able to draw really confidently and enjoy it.
Yeah.
That'd be a skill I'd love.
Brilliant. Well, I'm rooting for you, Josh.
Yeah.
I would like to study psychology, Josh. That's what I'd quite like.
Would you?
And get like a PhD. I'd love to be a professor.
I'd love that. That'd be fun. Do it.
Should I become a professor?
How long
did it take? I've got a 2-1 degree in tourism from a polytechnic. How quickly can I get to a psychology professor from that?
You could do an open university, psychology. Here you go. The open university for psychology.
Yeah. Talk me through it. What have I got to do?
Okay. Psychology and counselling at the OU. Yeah?
Yep. Yeah. Does that mean I do it from home, the open university?
Yeah. Yeah. Do it yourself. Here you go. Diploma in higher education in psychology. Oh, degree. Do you want to do a degree in psychology?
Well, I've already got a degree. Can I go? Can I already? But not
in
psychology.
Oh, you're under postgrad.
Postgrad, aren't I?
Yeah.
So is there like a fast track?
Okay.
Like,
do you want to go part time or full time, Rob?
I think I'll have to go part time. I don't think I've got.
Okay. So, part time. It takes you 6 years.
Oh, fucking hell. What goes full time?
3 years.
Yeah, I like that. How full-time is... Because when I was at uni, I did 8 hours a week, and I don't think full-time studying is the same as full-time working when you run your own business.
No, exactly. You need to do... How much time will I need? If you do part-time, you'll need to spend 16 to 18 hours a week. That's part-time.
Oh, but I'll piss that.
Really? That's three part-time. Days.
Not the way I work out days, mate. How much are you sleeping?
Oh, it's the wrong guest for this intro, really, isn't it? But there we go.
Do you know what? I am going to do that. I reckon when the kids are older, I'm going to do that 100%.
Great. Full-time. Sign you up.
What I'll do is I'll try and make a TV show out of it.
Oh, here we go. Someone's always looking for money. Right.
Now, from drawing classes, psychology degrees, to the bad boy of worldwide comedy. I was very excited to get Jim Jefferies. I was surprised why he agreed to do it, because he doesn't do many podcasts.
No, he doesn't do many podcasts, and you wouldn't expect this one to be the one, would you?
No, exactly. So we do find out why he's done it, though, which is very interesting. Please welcome one of the best comedians in the world, Jim Jefferies. Welcome to the show, Jim Jefferies.
Thanks for having me, lads. I appreciate it.
We're very excited to have you on,
yeah,
Jim.
Yeah, we are. And it's not so much that you're excited, we hear that the reason you're here is kind of parenting related.
Well, it's very parenting related. My mother-in-law, so obviously my wife's mother, this is her favourite podcast by a mile. She goes on about you two all the time.
And that's our demographic.
Yes, that's the way in.
And so she kept on going, oh, you have to go on this parenting podcast. I would make my day, my year, if you're on this parenting podcast. So when the doctor came in, because I don't do many podcasts, I said right away, so I'd like to give a shout-out to my mother-in-law, Beckett.
Beckett? Pardon? No wonder it's her favourite.
Becca, who lives in Burgess Hill, just outside of Brighton, where my lovely wife was brought up. And so she listens to this podcast. So I'm doing it for her, to talk about her grandchildren.
Lovely.
Yes.
Yeah, what's your setup? How many kids you got, Jim?
I got two kids. I got one that's a year and 10 months or 9 months, and I got a 10-year-old.
Right, nice.
Two different women, but me ex lives just up the road, and we all holiday and hang out together. And when me and the wife go out, my ex babysits for us and everything. So we're all very good.
Oh, wow. What a great setup.
That's unheard of, isn't it?
People are weird about it. Whenever they hear that, they just... People would prefer to you go, oh, I hate my ex, she's a bitch or something. That would be more comforting for people than to go, she's a lovely person who helps us babysit. She's wonderful. We're all family, man. We're all taking care of these kids together.
That's lovely. I think maybe the gap helps with that, doesn't it?
Yeah, completely. Slightly. Completely.
If it was 3 months apart, she might have the ump.
Yeah, I assume both of them might have been upset with that one. But my son's not, you know, he's at the age where he's just happy to have a sibling, you know. Like, he's not jealous or anything because there's enough of a gap. But I remember he asked all the time, like, can he have a brother or sister? Can he have a brother or sister? And I kept on thinking, like, do you like this house? And one day, do you want all of it or half of it? This is the choice you're making right now, just for a bit of extra company when you're a kid.
Because you're from Australia, and then you met your partner in the UK. Now you're in LA.
Well, my partner's from the UK, but I met her in LA.
Oh, right, you met her in LA. Sorry. So she's from the UK. You met her in LA. So what your child, well, your children, what are they? What are they? Just pure American? What's their accent? Well, what's their attitude? What they describe themselves as?
The 10-year-old, you know, obviously has an American accent, plays Little League baseball.
Yeah.
You know, but occasionally I hear him, he'll be playing Fortnite with his friends, and he'll be like, hey, go around the back, shoot that guy, cover me. And then he'll go, good work, mate. And I'm just like, oh, no. And it always sounds funny coming out of that accent. But I got him an Australian passport. We go into Australia all the time. The baby I haven't got any extra passports for, but I think we'll get him probably an English one. So we got all of our bases covered, so we can all be spies and travel around the world with our multiple passports.
And what's it like with kids growing up in LA? Is it kind of Hollywood? Are you in Hollywood? Is it starry?
My kid goes to school, and I won't say any names because I can't really because it's in the school, but all the kids at my kid's school are all, the parents are all movie stars and professional athletes, famous musicians and stuff like that.
I want names so much. I know you can't, but I want names so much, Jim.
I'll tell you as soon as we get off. My kid goes to some very exciting birthday parties. I will say this one because we're not at the school anymore, but my kid used to go to preschool with Gal Gadot's daughter. And he never, I don't think they were friends or anything. And I was always trying to push a bit of a friendship because I wanted to go to that kid's birthday.
And so what's like pickup like? Is it, are they, or is it all just people sending nannies, or you just stood there with
there's a lot of nannies and a lot of, you know, Rolls Royces show up, but it's not more expensive than any other private school. It just so happens that's, you know, this is. And I assume all the private schools around here would be the same thing, you know, all be movie stars and what have you.
Have you been to any of the, the Christmas play and stuff? Must be absolutely... The competition to be the lead in that must be incredible.
This is the thing. I go watch the Christmas concert and I think these kids should be better. Like, they're all from showbiz families. Like, they should have picked up something. Yeah. You know? These kids are all loved and pushed. I don't think we have any, you know, King Richards or Joe Jacksons in the school.
No King or Queen makers.
Exactly. Everybody's already made it. They're just like this. You kids can sit back and enjoy.
Because you had a great routine that I still quote to people and it makes me laugh about, you know, when you're growing up, you didn't have all the fancy holidays and nice lifestyle, and then you managed to get lovely holidays, and then you turn around and the routine is your kids sat there at, like, 2 years old enjoying this amazing desert island holiday, and you'd be resentful. Do you still get that?
I'm still resentful, we went to Hawaii the other day, and we had to change our flights to fly back, right? And I said, we can change the flights, but business class is sold out, right? And my son said, well, how would we get home? I'm like, there's another classmate. Like, when you when when you see him, like, they're sitting up in business class at a bed, and you see, like, some, like, 6'4" like walking through with, like, a pillow around his neck, just sort of strudging through, and he looks at, like, the 2-year-old sitting in the chair, and it's like, dude, I get it, man. I resented it. As soon as the kids are old enough to take care of themselves, out the back you go. I reckon I'm about a year away now before I just send them to, like, the shocking truth of life.
Do you tell them about your upbringing? Do you tell them stories about what it was like for you growing up?
Well, my son, he loves stories about me and my brothers beating each other up. He thinks that he'll go, can you tell me a story about when Uncle Danny hit ya? Well, so I told a story about my brother chased after one of my other brothers in a fight with a golf club, and he started hacking into the door like the Shining, right? Yeah. So my dad decided that we weren't responsible enough for doors, and he took all the doors off. This is like the height of puberty when you're really, your door's your best friend. We're sitting there, we're putting blankets over the door. With about 2 years, doorless.
Where did he put the doors? Did he sell them or did he just put them in storage?
He just took them off the hinges and put them in the garage, and they just sat there until he wanted to screw them back on again. But my son loves stories like that. Any story about, you know, getting smacked by your parents, because it's so foreign to him now, the idea of, like, someone... A large woman chasing you around the house with a wooden spoon. My son thinks that sounds like a cartoon character, like you're watching a Looney Tunes thing. And I'm like, that was how it was. You'd clench your thigh as hard as you could. You'd take a few hittings until eventually the spoon would break, and then you'd just laugh at her, and that would make her even more enraged. Like, that was some good stuff. And it's funny because I look back at it with a fondness. I'm sort of like, oh, I'm glad that sort of happened.
Have you taken any of that into your parenting? Like, can you ever imagine confiscating the doors?
Yeah, I reckon it was a punishment that stuck. I never fucked around with doors again. I to this day have real respect for doors and what they give us.
Do you do much of the, like, the disciplining? Are you the taskmaster, as it were?
Yeah, I do. But, like, you know, the big discipline now is you just take away the Wi-Fi or the whatever. Mm. That seems to be the first go-to. Well, I started out with that whole the naughty step thing, which I never understood when they're very little, when you do this. All right, you're on your naughty step. My son would sit there and cry, like, and he hadn't figured out that I've never hit him, so why doesn't he just get up and walk away? Like, what was this magnetic pull? Like, it was a house of cards that I was like, and you have to sit there. What would have happened if he didn't? Yeah. I don't know what I would have done.
Well, my daughter just walked away. We had to just abandon the first time we put her on the naughty step, she just went upstairs, and you're like, well, game over.
Yeah. You know, what do you reckon's the top disciplines you can do for a kid, say, under 4? Ooh. There's not much you can
do. It's difficult. No.
The step's all you've got if they respect it.
Yeah. If they respect it. You can confiscate a few things. You can go, all right, you're not getting blah, blah, blah. But
that's treats. No treats is quite a good one.
No ice creams and stuff like that.
Yeah. I took it further. The other day, my son broke something by accident. He broke a thing. And I was just there. And I normally don't give my kids ice cream all the time, only on special occasions. But I do eat ice cream after they go to bed all by myself. There's a lot of treat giving that I give to myself, like the amount of fast food, because I don't, like, you're not allowed fast food, but my car's filled with fast food bags, right? And if I throw them out in my bin here, it's too obvious. So I've got to chuck them in, like, the neighbor's bins and all that stuff so that I don't get caught not practicing what I preach, you know what I mean? So the other day he was in trouble for breaking something, and I really wanted ice cream, and so I just got it out and started eating it. He goes, can I have some? I go, no, part of your punishment is you have to watch me eat ice cream. Not only I would have waited the extra hour until it was bedtime, but I just got it.
And you're on this massive tour at the moment. You've just done the UK, but you're doing like the rest of Europe. You're off to, you're all over the place. So do you do that on your own, or do you take the family, or what? Do you have any rules on how long you're away?
Well, I used to take my eldest boy right up until he started proper school. I used to take him everywhere with me. He used to come on the road everywhere. Mm. And then once they start school, it gets trickier, you know. Yeah. And I try not to gig in the summer because that's when the school holidays is. So I try to actually have a family vacation. But I took the wife and the baby to the UK because, you know, Becca, hello, you're listening, because my mother-in-law took care of the baby whenever we needed. So that was a night, because we don't have family here. So that's what's good about having my ex up the road, that we're all family, we can all help. We don't have any grandparents or anything like that. And then for Europe, it's just, it's a different city every day. So I'm not going to put the kids through that. You know what I mean? There's always like this whole idea that it might broaden their horizons or something. I took my son, I did a tour of Australia last summer, and I took him on the road, and I was going to teach him work ethic or something like this. I was going to give him some job to do on the road. And I couldn't think of anything that didn't involve like a hard hat or was dangerous. You couldn't help set up any of the crew stuff. No, and it's like you can't do sound check. There's not a lot for a kid to do. So I let him bartend in the dressing room, right? And I said, you'll get an hourly rate. All you have to do is ask everyone what drinks they want. And this is how you open a beer, and this is how you pour a Jack and Coke. And I'm like, is this good training for a 10-year-old? but then being an American kid, you know, when it comes down to it, he put out a tip jar. And who doesn't? So I was giving him an hourly rate.
Oh, wow.
Who doesn't tip a 10-year-old when they get you a Jack and Coke? You've got to throw a buck in there, right?
Yeah, especially if it's free in the dressing room.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cost you nothing. Exactly. But that meant my opening acts were paying tips in their own dressing room for a very dodgy service. I used to have a job when I was 11 where I used to have to work at this news agents. And what I had to do, this is the weird thing about my parents. My parents were more into us working than us doing well at school, right? Yeah, work ethic was more. My father worked in construction. My mother was a school teacher. But, you know, so my job was at 11. I had to do deliver the papers. And then I came back and I had to throw out all the trash for this news agent. So it was big boxes. And I had like a mechanical lift that took it down to the basement, like, but I used to just stand on with a butt, like real dodgy for the, and then I'd throw it out. But the benefit of this job was at the end of each month, they threw away all the magazines. So I had bins filled with Playboys and Penthouses and Hustlers, like just filled. And at 11, this is gold. I have a box of gold, right? And so
Pre-internet pornography was... You just couldn't get it.
Yeah, you couldn't get it, right? So I would get $5 a shift from that, and it would be a two-hour shift, and they give me $5 Australian. So I'd get $25 for the week. But then with the porn empire, I was selling the porn magazine off for $5 a magazine at my school, right? But I would put them behind the dumpster, hidden in this area that was a bit dry, and then I would fill up my bag and another bag, a plastic bag, and I'd dump the plastic bag in our front garden and wait till my parents were asleep to duck out of the house to go get that into the house, bring in the bag. So I had so much pornography in my room, piles and piles of it. And it was all the same magazine.
Why are they chucking it out? How does porn don't go out of date, surely?
Well, this is
how's it an old? No one's going, oh, that's the April edition, not for me.
It was all magazines. What they do is they cut the head off the magazine that said the title, and they'd send that back to the manufacturer and get a refund. I think now there'd be some type of
sale or return. Yeah,
there'd be some type of recycling program going on. But not in Australia in the late 80s. So I get caught with this magazine, and then my parents come down, and some kid squealed, you know, he got caught with a magazine, and I get that. And I remember this sort of the entrepreneurial glee that my father had for this, that he came up with it himself. He started a business. Yeah.
How old were you, Jim, when you was doing that?
I was 11.
11. That is young, isn't it? To be
11
selling
till 13
porn.
Was this the porn empire. And then I went off at 14 to work at McDonald's, which there was no porn to be had.
Oh,
but you didn't get to meet girls. So that was something that McDonald's offered that the other job didn't.
how much are you trying to influence your kids and stuff? Like, you're saying your parents, they were very into you.
He signed
him
up to a Playboy subscription.
Yeah. Are you one of those parents that's trying to mould your kid and steer them or stuff, or just let them get on with what they want to do?
You try to find out... I think everyone does this. You try to find out where their talents lie or what their interests are and try to encourage that. You know, at the moment, my son plays baseball and he's doing reasonably well, so I've started to get him a little bit of coaching on that so he can enjoy that sport a little bit more. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I can't teach him. I grew up playing cricket. Yeah. Like, he's pitching for the team and I'm like, he's like, what do I do now, Dad? And I'm like, I don't know, man, I think you lift up your front leg a bit more or something. But then, you know, still at this age, it's very hard to tell what they're going to be or what they're going to, you know. So, yeah. So look, I'm into the arts. I always did well at art at school, at any type of art, you know what I mean? So I'm sort of, I push my kids a little bit more in that direction. And maybe I should be making them read, you know what I mean? And I wish I was better at that. I'd like to be one of those dads. And grant you, my wife and my ex do this a lot better than I do, but I was never one of those dads that sat up and read them a book at night. You know, I'd always go up and tell some type of book. I'd tell them some bullshit story, you know, embellished story, and then I sort of say goodnight. But I wish I sort of was more hands-on with the reading aspect.
Yeah, reading is boring, though. That's what I struggle with. I'm so bored.
I didn't enjoy it either.
I
don't read a lot of books anyway. And so it's hard for me to go, you have to bloody read books. He never sees me with one in my so for a little while there, when I was trying to encourage him to read a lot more, because he pointed out maybe when he was 6 or 7 that I didn't read, you know.
Yeah.
So I had a book that I would leave on the coffee table. And when I heard him coming downstairs, I'd open it up and talk about it. And then when he'd come, I'd go, oh, yes, how can I help you, Hank? And I'd put it down. Just having a bit of a read.
And how do you get on with the other parents? Because, you know, you're a very likable, charming person, Jim, but you do say what you're thinking at that time, which sometimes at the school gates for the parents don't always work.
I watch myself at the sports. I maybe say a bit too much. I yell out a bit too much. But I'm always doing gags, you know what I mean? Like, I get along with the parents okay. Mind you, there was a school teacher came up to my son the other day that worked at the school and came up and said, I just watched your father's special. And my son was like, oh, okay. She goes, it's not for children, is it? The things he said. And he hears this, he goes, oh, Dad doesn't let me watch it, right? Which I don't. He doesn't watch my comedy. But imagine, like, okay, you might not like what I do and I might be a smut monger and all that type of stuff, but you're like, porn stars' children have to go to school as well, right? You would never walk up to a porn star's kid and go, saw one of your mum's videos. not for children, is it? Leave it be.
Have you got an age in mind when he could come and watch you? Or would you want him to watch you live or watch you on Netflix or YouTube or whatever?
I think watch me come to a show live. And I think sort of 15, maybe. Like I know he would have checked me out online before that, if he hasn't already. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's a difficult one. I remember, like, my nieces and nephews started coming to the shows around 15, 16, and I felt a little awkward then as well. Like, I definitely toned it down one gear, you know. But now it's funny. It's like all my nieces and nephews are, like, in their 20s, and they're all bringing their mates along to my shows, and I'm just there doing anal sex jokes, and they're all clapping along, and it breaks my little heart, it does.
Because obviously you were quite kind of, it's rock and roll the wrong word, but you know, you like big nights out and going for it and stuff. So that's when your child is 15 or 16, I suppose it's different in LA because it's more difficult to go out at a younger age. And in the UK, you can
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah. Pubs at 15,
in Australia,
16.
You can sneak into a place, but in America, they'll make a 50-year-old show their ID. So yeah. They will. So we check everyone. You know, we're not picking on you. You know, and the biggest problem I foresee happening with the parenting is me going, hey, don't take drugs. And there's all this footage of me talking about taking drugs. Like, I really don't have a leg to stand on. So I'm going to have to think of a way to approach that.
When you talk about toning your act down when the kids are in, or like your nieces, nephews, what about when Becca from Burgess Hill, the mother-in-law, when she's in, does that affect you or do you not care?
No, I talked about her and my father-in-law in the last special. I did some pretty graphic jokes about having sex with their daughter. and I even told... And
your wife, your partner, not her sister. Just to be clear. It'd be a terrible way for it to come out, wouldn't it?
But it's like at the end of the day, you just got to go, oh, well, this is what I do. You know, I banned my mother from seeing me. She couldn't come to any more shows because every time I'd see her, she was such a large person and she was an intimidating figure. And it's like, it was like a glow around her. And I could just spot her wherever she was. And I couldn't, I'm sure you guys, you have your parents coming?
Yeah. I hate the gigs where I know anyone, but particularly family. You just, that's all I think about throughout the gig, even if I can't see them.
I've got better at that. I used to not like it, but...
That's because you've got so much family. They come to every single gig in some way.
Every gig is full of
me. My dad has seen me maybe 50 times. He's always there. And there was one time, and it was one of those shows, because I don't drink anymore for this express reason. I was doing Sydney and I had a late show and I let it get away from me and I was too drunk to perform. For this late show, you know what I mean? And I was slurring my words and I got off stage and I knew I'd let myself down. And if I'd paid for that, I'd be upset with me, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't a good show. And I came off just so ashamed. And my father was in the audience and I'm like, oh man, my dad saw that, right? And then he comes backstage and he'd been drinking as well. And he goes, that was the best one. He'd seen me 8 times that week, right? And he was like, you changed things up a bit. You went off script.
I don't mind them coming, my parents, but I don't like seeing them before. I'll see them after, but I need to sort of calm down in the dressing room before I go out. If there's
it's just
people
tense,
beforehand,
isn't it?
It stresses me out. But.
Well, my wife's family, they all came when I was in Brighton. They all showed up. We had cousins and aunties and all that type of stuff. And I'm telling a story in the show about how my wife suggested that we get a prostitute for my birthday, right? Now, that's an actual routine. I'm like, oh, no. Well, basically, the routine goes, and this is how it happened, was my wife suggested we get a prostitute, and I just didn't play it cool. I should have gone, I don't know, if something you want, it's not for me. I want to see the Soleil show. But I ran straight to the computer and had a web page up in seconds, right? So
and then, because it's hard, because you're coming back to the UK, is that a family reunion? But they use your gig as the reunion, and then you're talking about that. It does make it awkward.
Oh, it
after.
Does, yeah. And that is the weird thing, that, like, sometimes your gigs, like you said, are a family reunion. So it's the only time my nephews and niece see their cousins, because they all show up. And I see my cousins all at once, and my brothers are in the same room at the same time. It is very good for that, because otherwise we wouldn't all hang out. How old are your kids? We're not talking about my kids. How old are your kids?
Mine's seven and five, and yours, Josh?
And mine's 5 and 1.
Yeah, okay. So you're all right in the thick of
it. We're in
right?
the clear at the moment. Rob took his to a gig.
You're not the age now where you have to worry about them socially too much.
No.
Yeah, because eventually now it's going to start like the cliques in school and all that type of stuff. And you know what's about to happen, what they call the Great Divide. And the Great Divide happens around 9 years old, where the boys and girls just stop playing with each other and they sit in separate areas in school and we never truly come back together ever. Like, we don't. Yeah, we sort of hang out with our mates. They hang out with their friends. You try to date one, and then you think you might have one or two female friends, but then you, for the most part, we've got to click and stay with our sex, you know what I mean? And so the great divide's about to happen, where they hate the opposite sex, but they also secretly like them too much.
Oh, did you observe that happening with your son?
Yeah, I've seen that happen. He had these female friends, female friends that he grew up with, girlfriends that he grew up with, and then they went off with the girls, and then he went off with the boys, and that's just the great divide, man.
Oh man, has he shown any interest in has he had a girlfriend or a?
No, he's still not at that age to have a girlfriend. Although one time I remember sitting there and we had Transformers on, and Megan Fox was walking along strutting in high heels with explosions going on. I saw him sort of sit up a bit, you know. And I went, hey, she's pretty, isn't she? She's pretty, isn't she? And he goes, yeah. And I go, you like her, mate? You think she's all right? And he goes, yeah, I do. I like girls, but I wouldn't want one as fancy as that. That's what he said. I'm like, well done, son. That took me bloody decades to figure that out.
I wouldn't want one as fancy as that.
Those fancy ones, they look good. They're very expensive, mate. You're well
Would you like him to become a comedian? Would you enjoy that, or would you find that stressful?
I would, if it's something that he wanted to do, I would encourage it. I don't know if him being my son would help him or be a hindrance, you know what I mean? Because often there has been a lot of comedians' siblings and children and stuff like that. I'm trying to think of one that's ever really taken off. I don't know if it's...
Yeah, it's not know, like...
Richard Pryor's kids all gave it a go, and you know, I know George Carlin's
Tom Holland is Spider-Man, but he's acting rather than stand-up.
Yeah,
Tom
Holland was... Yeah, I remember meeting... I saw Dominic at Edinburgh once, and I remember once seeing, Tom as a very little child, right? At Edinburgh, and I remember saying to my son, I said, I've met Spider-Man when he was about 4, right? And my son still thinks I'm bullshitting.
I wanted to ask you as well, Jim, about, about what's it like when the little one now? Because obviously 10 years ago, you were still drinking 10 years ago when you had your first.
Yeah, but I had more energy 10 years ago. I had more energy. I could handle hangovers and stuff like that. I'm an old dad now. I'm 46 with a one-and-a-half-year-old, and I've had the snip. I'm not having any more.
Right, you're done.
How quickly did you... Because that's how quickly after the birth, or was it just after conception?
Oh, I had it done about 4 months ago. It was quite recent, and no recovery time whatsoever. I had it done by this guy who does everybody, he's done thousands and thousands of them, and he gave me a certificate afterwards, like a well done, you've done it certificate. And I'm like... Yeah, that's a bit patronising. I don't think, you got to give it up to women. They would never get their tubes tied, and then a doctor would be as presumptuous to go, and here's a certificate, congratulations, for a man who's just I did something, right? So, I had the snip, so no more kids for me. I just keep on counting forward to, you do that thing, when he's 14, I'll be 60 and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It just gets away from you a bit. If anything, I wish I had my second child a little earlier, you know, but you meet your wife when you meet her, you know what I mean? So, but I feel like you guys are younger. You had your kids younger, right?
Yeah, I was 29. But I think me and you are very different at 29, Jim. I don't think you should have had a kid at 29.
Oh, I would have been a terrible father at 29. But it's that's a good age, man. You're gonna, and also, you know what else will happen with you? Your kid will be old, and then you'll still have a bit of life left in you to do things. You'll go,
that's the plan. But the problem
you're
is...
You're going to be a lot of babysitting, Rob.
No, I keep thinking, because when I get to 40, 45, my kid's potentially like starting to go to uni or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. So like late 40s.
Bloody hell.
And then I've got my whole, like, you know, life to go and do stuff. And you think I'll have that energy. But each year I can see my energy bar dropping one. So it's sort of like real time, you can see it dropping down. And
but you've got to remember the energy you started with, Rob. By the age of 50, you'll just be at normal energy levels.
These are the things. So it's like I was talking about, I've never been to the Maldives. I was talking to the wife. I want to stay in one of those chalets that are on the water, all that stuff, which isn't a kid's holiday, right? And then I'm like, well, like now I have to wait until my kid's old enough that there's maybe 16, they can stay, 15, they can stay at home without me for a few days or whatever. And so I'll be too old to bother with that. That seems like a long flight.
Trying to get in the hammock. Oh, fucking
up. You see things dropping away like, I'm never doing that. That's all. The only holidays I want now are beach ones. There's no more sightseeing left in me.
Yeah, I think I'm done with that. I've travelled too much. I've seen enough airports.
If you built it, I've seen it. And if I haven't seen it by now, I didn't want to see it. You know, I haven't seen the pyramids, but I feel like that'll be a hot, dusty day. I don't know.
Yeah, you probably get bullied into buying a load of sort of blanket things, or you know,
there'll
tourist
be some
things.
People trying to sell me trinkets, and I'm like, no. But this is the thing. So, you have you done the family holiday now, where you go to Orlando or something like that?
I've done that. Josh hasn't yet to a Disney Orlando. Yeah.
You have to do it. There's a window of sort of 5 years where it makes sense. After that, they get a bit old or whatever. And you're coming up to that window. It's around 7, I think, is the sweet
spot.
Yeah,
so we went last year when they were like 6 and 4. And, and they absolutely loved it. And we're definitely going to go back. But I think 4's a bit young, but from 6, 7 up till about 11-ish, that is the peak time where they go absolutely mad for it. Once they become teenagers, they get a bit cool for it, don't they?
We're trying to plan like summer vacation. And I said, let's go to Hawaii. It's only a 5-hour flight from here. You know, go to Hawaii, right? I like Hawaii because it's still America, but it's not America. You don't have to worry about where your passport is and the money it works out for you. You know what I mean? Because I could go to Mexico as your other option or something like that, right? And so, but Hank's mother was like, there's a Nickelodeon water park world, like with SpongeBob rides and stuff in Cancun, that's a resort for children and all that stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but we live in LA. I can take him to Disneyland's just up the road.
Yeah.
Like, why do I have to go to this thing on vacation? We can go to theme parks whenever you want. You know, that's one of the privileges of living out here. You got to worry about school shootings and all that type of stuff, but you are close to theme parks.
Do you go on holiday as a big family with your ex and your...
Yeah, we do one family vacation a year with everybody.
Yeah, nice. So who's on that?
So it'll be me, my two boys, my wife and my ex. And we all go out together, and so my son will have a room with his mum, and I'll have, you know, and sometimes we'll book like a villa type thing where we all just live in a house or something like that.
People must just be going, that's such an incredible thing to make work.
Well, people look at you funny because we all, you know, walk along together. It looks like I'm, you know, a Mormon or something.
But was that straight off the bat, or did you have to work up to that? Was it like, did they all get, everyone get on straight away, or was it a bit like, let's try one night away, see how it goes?
I made it pretty clear. I dated someone before who did not like that I was friends with my ex, and then I made it pretty clear with my wife when we first started. I just said, look, it works for me and my son that I get along with my ex, and we do things every now and again. We'll have a dinner together or whatever. You know, that's how, and I genuinely like her as well, you know. So I said, that's just sort of the deal. And they're both just such nice people. It wasn't hard for the two of them to get along, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, it's something you've got to work at as well. You've got to choose to get along with, you know, like, you know, I'm choosing to get along with someone that I pay child support and all that type of stuff to, because what's the alternative? Being angry all the time or being bitter, you know, like, screw that. You might as well just fucking get on with it. Better for the kid. And also, we all spend Christmas together wherever we are in the world. So my ex came to Australia for Christmas, and she was there with my in-laws from Britain and my dad and all that type of stuff.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I bet you do some money on airfares, don't you? It's a lot of air travel.
It's not cheap. It's not cheap having everyone get along. It'd be cheaper to be enemies.
Yeah. Jim, I wanted to mention a gig that I did tour support for you once years ago when I was, and I felt so embarrassed about this. You'd just done a sold out show in the West End, recorded a DVD. You're like absolutely flying. And then it was just before you moved to LA. And I picked you up in a Golf that was about 35 years old 10 years ago. And I picked you up in Brixton and then it broke down. And I picked you up and it broke down with you in the car, and then we had to get it fixed, and I carried on. I drove to Hastings, and then we did the gig at that White Rock Theatre.
Was I well behaved, or did I complain the whole time?
You were, I don't know if you were hungover or what, but you were very quiet and quite reflective and very zen about it all. I don't know what was going on in your head or what you'd been up to, but it worked for me, because the whole time I was like, this is terrible. I hope you don't flip out. But you were so lovely. And then on the way back... We saw like three accidents that happened. I probably remember this more than you. It was like a massive moment in my career to do your support. And then I eventually got you over at like 3-4 in the morning. And I remember you went and you paid me. I'd already been paid through your agent, but you also gave me a big wad of cash and said, that's for you, mate. And I remember, because I really needed the money at the time. And it was really thoughtful of you, because it had been a horrendous journey. And you could have quite rightly withheld my fee because the car kept breaking down. Well, I don't know if you remember it.
I don't remember the car breaking down, but I do remember the gig. I remember thinking you were good. I think it was the only time I've ever seen you live. I've seen you on TV since, of course. I've always tried to be very zen about being late for gigs or something, because stressing out just doesn't help the situation. No. There's nothing to be done. Yeah. There was one time I was in a car with Tom Stade and I was panicking about being late for the gig, right? And Tom was a more sort of established comedian than me. And I think I was driving him, but I was like, oh, fuck, we're not going to make it to the gig. And he just had a cigarette in his mouth and he went, we are the gig.
Amazing.
I'm just, your tour dates, the list of places you're getting to go coming up is so, this is a fucking spring and summer. Milan, Berlin, Prague, Warsaw, Helsinki, Oslo, Bergen, Stavanger, Copenhagen, Stockholm, Vienna, Zurich, Budapest, Athens, Lisbon, Barcelona, Madrid, Tel Aviv, Dubai, Antwerp, etc., etc. Yeah. It's a great life, that, isn't it?
Well,
that's so much fun.
That, you say that. That sounds like living hell in a way. It would be wonderful if you were spending 4 days in each town.
Yeah, actually, they're each in a row. So you're not going, let's enjoy Oslo. You're going, I've got to be in Bergen in 12 hours.
Yeah, it's get off a plane, get in there. It's like I'm doing two shows in Helsinki and two shows in Warsaw in the space of 24 hours or something. That's like 6 hours of stand-up. So it's like apart from the meal that you have backstage. And so I'm a bit fatter at the moment because I just come off the UK bit, because I'm a sucker for if there's a particular type of local cuisine, well, I've got to have that. I'm not.
Right.
So if I'm in Philly, I have to have a Philly cheesesteak. If I'm in Buffalo, I have to have buffalo wings. I'm going to have pierogies backstage and bratwurst in Germany. I'm going to have, like, otherwise, what's the point of this trip? You know what I mean? So, and also everyone's thing that they're famous for is never a salad. There's no, there's no town that's like, oh, we make a famous salad. It's always something covered with cheese and a fucking dipped in something deep fried.
Jim, I don't want to panic you about your scheduling, but according to this website, on the 13th of May, you're in Barcelona. No, sorry, 15th of May, you're in Madrid. 16th of May, you're in Tel Aviv.
Yeah.
17th of May, Dubai.
Yeah.
18th of May, back to Belgium.
Yeah, that would be right.
That's a bloody hell.
What happened was Dubai and Israel had just been added to the tour, and so it was lovely routing before that. It all made sense. I had a couple of days off.
Yeah, you had a couple of days.
I was going to be eating paella. I was going to have a wonderful time, you know what I mean? But you go catch a football match. But
And then when's the tour all finishing? When can you rest? Or are you back in December as well?
After Europe, I'm going. All I've got is a weekend in Vegas, and I'm going to enter the Poker World Series.
Oh, yeah?
Whoa.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a go. Now, this is the thing is I'm not expecting to do well because I do all right when I'm playing with my friends, but they're not great poker players, you know what I mean? Yeah. And you can't play online here anymore. They made it illegal in America, so I don't really have much place to practice. But I'm a handy poker player. I end up, occasionally when I play at like a casino or something, if they have a tournament in the afternoon, I'll play. But it's always weird because you'll be in a tournament of like 60 people and like 30 of them are coming to the show. And so the tournament's like, it's a lot of chatting to people. I sort of try to stay quiet the whole time I'm playing. I'll tell you what, so I'm getting sort of lessons with this guy who's helping me out, who's a comic and a pro player. And I said to him, he goes, oh, I used to play with this Aussie guy. This Aussie guy used to play blonde hair, Shane, and I went, Shane Warne, right? And he goes, yeah, Shane Warne, because Shane Warne always used to enter things. He goes,
yeah.
He goes, wasn't a bad poker player. And I said, he was a pretty good cricketer. And he went, oh, did he play cricket as well? I'm like,
amazing. Little bit. We always finish with the final. Final question, which is about parenting. Do you want to do it this time, Rob?
Yeah, so basically, this is one thing about your partner. You might have to double up on this with your ex as well. One thing about your partner they do parenting-wise where you think, oh, my God, they're incredible. You know, I'm so blessed to have them as a, you know, a partner who's got to have a child with. And also one thing that they do that drives you mad that you haven't told them, that if they heard and they were listening to this, maybe Becca could feed back to her daughter, that they might go, actually, that's a fair point.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of stake here, because normally you think the partner's not going to hear, but their mum's going to hear.
If there's anything you
hear.
Want to say yeah. about your mother-in-law, any thoughts you have about Becca's, now's your chance to win some serious brownie points.
Oh, I think she should have been a better parent. My wife's a bit wild. She didn't discipline her enough. Okay, so one thing, what my wife does very well is she gets vegetables into the older boy very well, right?
Right.
Where I would give up a bit more, but she's determined. Sometimes a disproportionate amount of vegetables when she's not looking, I get a spoon and I eat some of his peas really quickly and I wink at him like, I know, mate, it's a bit much. Like, you know when you do that one?
Yeah.
And then I would say my ex doesn't, she's a bit more of a pushover. That's the bit where she has a problem. My wife, what does she do that drives me mad? Well, she, with the baby, she can't seem, oh God, she's probably listening. She can't seem to change a nappy, right? Without this baby pushing her off. Like, it's a fucking baby. just hold its arms down. Like, oh, he keeps on moving his arms. He keeps on moving his arms. Well, overpower him. You know what I mean? But you can't say that. You just got to go, oh, it looks difficult. Like each nappy change is a fucking war. And then I just sort of get in there and hold him down and off I go and then off you go, mate. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think you've got to pin them down. It's the only way, especially when they get a bit fighting. Because as they get older,
they're not going to remember it.
Yeah, you just cross the arms, pin them down with one hand, the other hand, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
Off you go.
Overpower him, that got me.
That might be my favourite answer we've had on that question. Thank you very much, Jim.
Yeah, that was absolutely
it's
brilliant.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for doing it. And big hello to Becca in Burgess Hill for connecting us in. For the new agent.
Cheers, Becca.
Cheers, Jim. Thanks, mate.
Thanks, lads.
Jim Jefferies.
I love that, Josh.
Really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed that.
I find it very exciting when you Zoom someone who's in LA.
Yeah. It's slightly annoying for our record times that we're now getting people from America, but apart from that, it's very exciting.
Yes, 7 p.m. Not ideal. Yeah. Could we not interview ideal. At 9 a.m. on a Monday morning, please?
Yes, please. Could you get up at 2 a.m. Sunday night LA time?
Well, that's
please?
When Michael sometimes sends over like a big name, part of me goes, yes, and then part of me goes, oh, that'll be on their schedule, won't it?
thank you to Jim. He's on tour. I'll see you on Tuesday, Rob.
I'll see you on Tuesday.
Cheers, mate.
And thank you, Jim Jefferies' mother-in-law.